Taking a look now at the world of ice fishing. Hi, Larry Mueller here, and my guest today with us by phone, Greg Brining, is co-author, along with Lane Kennedy, of the book A Hard Water World, Ice Fishing and Why We Do It. It's published by Minnesota Historical Society Press. Greg's the former managing editor of Minnesota Conservation Volunteer and has authored several books, including Fishing Minnesota, Wild Shore, and Minnesota Yesterday and Today, among other things. Lane Kennedy, not with us today, but his co-author, publishes photos and magazines, including National Geographic Traveler, Sports Illustrated, Life, Newsweek, Smithsonian, and other magazines. And you can see the quality of his work in this book. There are lots of wonderful shots of people out there ice fishing and the shanties and everything else. I hope you'll join in as we move along here today. Maybe you've got maybe you are an ice fisherman and have a story to tell. We'd love to hear some good stories. Maybe you've never ice fished and wonder why anybody's crazy enough to do it. And maybe you have some questions along those lines. And maybe you just have a general question. So give us a call. The number is 1-800-642-1234. 1-800-642-1234. Or email us at talk@wpr.org. And Greg Brining, welcome. Thank you for taking time to be with us today. Appreciate it.
Well, Larry, thank you very much. I appreciate it.
Tell you what, it's a beautiful book that you put together here.
Well, thank you very much. Yeah, I thought it came out really well. I was very pleased.
You're an ice fisherman.
I am. I'm primarily an open water fisherman, and I'm one of those guys who then will ice fish because that's the only way I can catch fish. Now, believe it or not, there are people who actually love ice fishing best of all, and we talk about those people too. I really tried to talk about all the motives people have for ice fishing in this book.
And I really want to get into some of those motives. Sean in Fond du Lac might even have a comment along those lines. Sean, hello.
Oh, hello. Good morning to you and your guests.
Good morning.
Well, I just wanted to say, you know, my wife and her friends and sisters and related can't understand why anybody would ice fish.
and what
I
do you tell
my
them?
Best answer I can give them is time alone or time with a few buddies, sitting in dead silence if need be.
Yeah, well, that's the case, isn't it?
Yeah.
And not too much happening around the old hole, but I think that's a motive for a lot of people. They just want to get out in the shack. In the book, I tell a story about one guy. A friend of mine related this story. Anyway, somebody suggested they go down to the ice house and pop in and say hi to Bullet down there. And so they walk down to the ice shack and knock on the door, and Bullet opens the door and here he is sitting in his ice shack with a few beers, and there's no ice hole. apparently, the fishing wasn't terribly important in Bullet's plan. Mainly, it was an opportunity to retreat to his shack and have some time alone.
I've actually had those days, too, where the drill wouldn't start. I didn't leave the lake.
Thanks, Sean.
Thank you.
Yeah, appreciate the call very much. Wow, that's a great way to start. Nathan in Trade Lake, we'll go to you. Hi, Nathan.
Hey there.
Hi, Nathan.
I figured I'd call and weigh in on this.
All right.
Yeah, the reason all my friends and I go out ice fishing is time away from everyone. It's like going to the cabin, playing cards, and once in a while getting a rattle reel.
There you go. Every once in a while, your pastime is interrupted by a fish.
Exactly. Thanks a lot, guys.
Thanks a lot for calling. I appreciate it. And Brad at Gamblesport, hi to you.
Hi there. How are you guys today?
Great.
We're doing well, Brad. Thanks.
Fantastic. The question I have for you today is, I was curious, in your book, do you have any photographs of old-time ice fishing? My grandfather used to take me to Lake Winnebago in the 60s, and there was fellas out there had Model A Fords with, like, snowmobile tracks on the back, skis on the front.
Oh my gosh, yeah. You know, we don't have anything quite like that. We've got 2 or 3 old time photos in the book, although you won't find many of them there. Most of them are contemporary photos.
Oh, okay. Well, thank you.
All right. Thanks very much for calling. And maybe we should go ahead and have you talk about the book itself and how it's organized and what you've got in it.
Sure. Well, you know, this was an attempt by both Lane and me to sort of celebrate ice fishing, talk about the culture of ice fishing as a bit of Northern Americana. I don't want anybody to get the idea that anything in this book will help them in any way catch a fish. It's not how to at all.
No.
I don't spill all of my great ice fishing secrets because, you know, I'm a pretty mediocre ice fisherman. but it is an attempt to just kind of celebrate the sport, which I guess Lane and I have come at it from a couple of different directions. Lane loves winter. Lane isn't even an ice fisherman, but he loves winter. He loves ice, and he just likes being outside and taking photos of whatever's going on during the winter, and had accumulated a lot of great images of ice fishing and thought, wow, there's a book here. And so he asked me to make the proposal, and for me it was a matter of, you know, I always found ice fishing interesting because it so readily made fun of itself. You know, I can't think of another sport that would have something comparable to the Eel Pout Festival, the International Eel Pout Festival that they do every year in northern Minnesota, or the Teepee Town Festival that they do in the in Michigan, in which, you know, it's just a parody of the sport itself. It's not just a contest. It's a parody. And there's something about ice fishing that just provokes laughter.
I think you're exactly right on that. Well, it does it take a sense of humor to accept ice fishing as an emblem of your
life?
Well,
I guess it does, since people are going to be making fun of you for doing it. You know, it just makes it easier all the way around if you're good natured about it. And it's funny, you know, you talk to somebody who doesn't come from a northern place, didn't grow up with it. In fact, just a couple days ago, I was talking to a guy from Egypt. Now, this guy loves to fish. He loves to eat fish. He loves to catch fish. He loves camping and all of that. But I got to talking to him about ice fishing. And he thought, well, that all sounds very interesting, but there's no way you're going to get me out on the ice, especially in a car. And I said, oh, it's fine. You know, just take your seatbelt off and leave the windows open. You'll be fine. He said, no way.
Well, I tell you what, I did have a friend whose car went through the ice.
Ooh.
Got out.
Did he get out okay?
Yeah, he got out okay, and the vehicle went down into fairly deep water.
Oh, it did.
And, of course, the rules in Wisconsin are that you, by law, have to get those vehicles out of the water.
Right.
And it was a pretty expensive
I bet it was, and the car was probably totaled, wasn't it?
Oh, yeah. But, and, you know, we had to get a scuba diver from about 100 miles away, and I went and hooked it up to the vehicle, and then he went home, and then they tried to pull it up the next morning, and the attachment came off, so they had to go back.
Oh, no.
Get the guy to come another 100. Anyway, they eventually got it out, and it was the story. I wish he was with me in the studio today, because the story he tells of this, I laughed so hard. The tears just rolled down listening to this story.
You know, maybe they need life preservers for cars. You know, you tie like a big styrofoam block to the top of your roof, and you go through and, you know, you just hang there.
Well, here's the way ice fishermen, you know, ice fishermen even complain about the fact that I was talking to an ice fisherman who has one of these, a four-wheeler.
Uh-huh.
And he was complaining that he has to have a flotation on the four-wheeler so that it will definitely float.
You mean to be legal or just for his own safety or reassurance?
To be legal.
Oh, really? I didn't realize that.
Oh, okay. Yeah. Well, in some lakes, in the Madison Lakes. And
okay.
He said, and there's no law in the books that says a boat has to float.
Oh,
but there is
one
that says a four-wheeler has to float.
I had no idea.
Well, That's a local kind of a law here. Well, tell you what, share, and let me give the number again. If you want to join in, maybe you've got a story or a question here as we talk with Greg Brining about his book, A Hard Water World, Ice Fishing and Why We Do It. I hope you'll join in. Give us a call at 1-800-642-1234 or email us at talk@wpr.org. We'd love to hear from you if you've got a good story to tell or tell us why you ice fish or why you don't. Give us a call or send us an email, talk@wpr.org. Well, when as I look through the book, there are so many ways, and there are lots of people coming online here. There's so many ways. I think ice fishing now is a lot more popular, as you point out in the book, maybe than it was 40 years ago, and equipment has a lot to do with it.
Well, I think so. It's certainly more effective. So if your aim is to actually catch fish, it makes a lot more sense to ice fish now than it did 40, 50 years ago when I was growing up. You know, back then you didn't have the clothes. I remember going out with my dad, and my most vivid memory is that of being cold.
Yes.
You know? You're out there in leather hunting boots with as many wool socks as you can stuff into them. And then the clothes weren't very good. You know, you may have been wearing cotton jeans or something with some cotton long johns, and they don't work so well, especially when they get wet. And so it was uncomfortable unless you had a nice, warm, toasty house. And I think the thing that really made the difference with ice fishing, and I suppose there are people who would disagree with this, but I think the advent of lightweight, reliable power augers.
Absolutely.
The fact that you can just lay out a string of holes in no time at all and fish all of them, and you can use things. People like fish finders. People realize you can shoot fish finders through the ice, and so you can find the break lines. You might even be able to see the fish. You can lower an underwater camera down the hole to see what's down there. You know, before, 50 years ago, it was also hit and miss. You'd chop out a hole with an ice spud or a hand auger, which took a long time, so you didn't want to move. I mean, you really had an investment in that ice hole.
Yes.
And there you'd sit, and you really had no way of knowing if you were exactly in the spot you wanted to be in. You didn't know if there were actually any fish around unless they were biting. And if they weren't biting, man, you just didn't want to move because, you know, going drilling a hole somewhere else was going to take you 15 minutes of hard work.
Yeah, absolutely. I agree with you 100%. Cutting holes in the ice is a lot of work.
Yes, it is.
But I'll tell you one quick story before we take some calls here again. Fishing on New Year's Eve one year, I was fishing on the Madison Lake with a friend, and I dug a hole, and I put the tip up over it. I was still on my hands and knees over the hole, and I said, boy, this looks like a good spot. And the flag went up, and I pulled in a 9-pound walleye.
Wow. Fishing, boy, you can't beat that.
Fishing for about 10 seconds.
Yeah. Well, that's a real good average, isn't it?
doesn't work that way very often, though.
You just multiply that over a day, and you think, well, gosh, I should have my limit in no time.
Kathy in Green Bay. Hi, Kathy.
Hi.
Hi, Kathy.
Hi. I've got a real cute story. My niece was working in the Peace Corps in Guatemala, and she was helping them to learn to fish farm or raise fish for food. And she was telling them how when she grew up, that people go out in the winter and the ice on the lake is thick, and they walk out there and they cut holes and they get fish through the ice.
Uh-huh.
Well, her Guatemalan students all started laughing and saying, you're pulling our leg. They didn't believe her, and she had to have her mother get pictures of people ice fishing.
See, even they saw the humor in ice fishing, right?
Absolutely. Oh, man. Thanks for calling. Greg Brining, our guest today, as we talk with him about his book, A Hard Water World, Ice Fishing and Why We Do It. I'm Larry Mueller. Jim Packard, our producer here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio. Talking ice fishing with Greg Brining today, author of A Hard Water World, Ice Fishing and Why We Do It. It's published by Minnesota Historical Society Press. And, man, if you're interested in ice fishing or have friends or family who are, it's a great book to look through and look at the pictures. The photographs are absolutely gorgeous. So I'm really pleased to have Greg with us today to talk with you. You know, one of the other things I think, Greg, in terms of ice fishing, especially I'm going to go to the Madison area here. It's an urban area with four lakes.
Mm-hmm.
I talked to a guy out there one day, and he said, you know, I can't afford a boat, and so I can't get out to these spots to fish in the summertime.
Mm-hmm.
But in the winter, I can walk out there, and it doesn't cost a lot, and I can go to wherever I want on the lake.
Well, that's absolutely true. Absolutely true. I hadn't thought of it in quite that way, you know, there are a lot of guys who really invest a lot of effort into their ice houses.
Yes.
So that they can have their cabin on the lake,
yeah,
at least part of the year, literally, and... Yeah, it's not as expensive as having real, you know, year-round real estate. And then, when Lane and I were in Russia, there were a lot of fishermen there. We went ice fishing on the Volga River. Had to get permission from the KGB to do that. And it was kind of a long, shaggy dog story. But the thing you really noted is that here was an opportunity for guys who undoubtedly didn't have boats. I mean, most of them didn't have cars. They were arriving there in buses, on motorcycles, all kinds of conveyances, and they had just, you know, were ran out onto the ice. They had access to all this fishing water in a way that they wouldn't have in the summertime.
Yeah, absolutely. Well, Greg in Menominee, Michigan's on board here, so let's go to Greg. Hi, Greg.
Hello, my friend.
Hi, Greg.
Yeah. I'm telling you, I listen to your callers, and I'm listening to you talking about these ice shacks and that. And up here in Menominee area, in Marinette, I'm telling you, you can't believe the size of these shacks.
Yeah.
I was raised in this ice fishing thing. My dad, you had one of them little bugs you were talking about, the old Model A, and he fell through the water once, the whole ball of wax for the ice, I should say. But anyways, I'm used to these shacks getting pretty big, you know, 4 or 5 foot square. But when I went to...
4 or 5 foot square?
That's small.
That's nothing.
I know.
When I went to KUS and started working there, I got friendly with a foreman, and he says, oh, you ought to come out to our place sometime. So I went out there one day, and as I approached this thing, it looked like a house on the ice.
Yeah.
They haul it out with a tractor because you can't pull it with a truck. That's how big this thing is. It's like 24 foot square. It's like a garage.
Yeah, wow. And
before they do it, they cut a 6 foot hole through the ice with chainsaws.
Yeah.
And we're talking 2.5 foot of ice. And then they take that out, and then they pull the whole shack over it. When I walked in the door, one of the guys was frying some fish. He even had a chef's hat on. Everybody had their coats off. It was nice and warm. They had a separate room, bathroom in the thing, you know. They had bunk beds. I couldn't believe it. They had a TV going. They had a little generator there. I mean, they're around playing cards around the table, and you sit on a couch or an easy chair with just regular clothes on, nothing, take your coats and hat off, and sit back and fish right on this 6 foot hole. It's just amazing. I loved it.
Wow, that sounds pretty deluxe.
That, well, and you, Greg, have some great stories and show a lot of these really fancy ice shanties.
Yeah, here in Minnesota, in central Minnesota, is a big round lake called Mille Lacs. They call it the Walleye Factory of Minnesota, and it is an extremely popular lake for ice fishing. During the middle of the winter, there'll be as many as 6,000 shacks on Mille Lacs. And shacks, of course, is a misnomer because a lot of these places are, as Greg said, deluxe and huge. I recall one I was in that was, I think, 24, 28 feet long and 10 feet wide, 12 feet wide, that had the stereo sound system, the home entertainment system, and two TVs, one for watching television or DVDs, and the other for the underwater camera that was dropped down the hole. And it had a kitchen, a really nice kitchen, had an indoor bath, had a couch to sit on, as well as stools around for people who are dining there. And what a lot of these guys will do is that they will store their ice shacks on the shore right near the lake during the summertime. They'll pay a rental fee for that. And then they'll use the shacks as summer cabins during the summer because they're that big. There were a couple of guys there that we talked to who one of them had worked in a hardwood flooring business. And so he had tons and tons of scraps of hardwood flooring. So their ice house, which measured about, I think, 20 feet by 12 feet, had a full parquet floor with four different kinds of exotic hardwoods in it, in all these intricate borders and designs. It was gorgeous. It was one of the most gorgeous floors I'd ever seen. And they even had a parquet floor in the outhouse next to the ice house.
Oh, that's a good... Greg, thank you very much for calling. Appreciate your call. You know, we've got some emails, too, before I go back to the phones. Corey emailed us and even sent a picture of a nice walleye here. So I just didn't want you to think that there aren't women who love to ice fish. I've learned through the years that catching the fish is just the icing on the cake. For me, it's about being outdoors with my family, my dogs, and my friends. I've got a picture of the grandson's first ice fishing trip. And the second is her with the largest fish last year. She doesn't say how much it weighs, but it's a nice size walleye.
That's so super.
So women are out there, too.
Absolutely.
And I'm glad she called. Let's go to John in Oshkosh next. John, hi.
How you doing, Larry?
Great. Thanks for calling.
Hi, John.
How you doing?
Good.
Yeah. No big ice shanties here, but my idea of ice fishing, I guess, is sitting off the back of my truck through a hole I drilled with my hand auger. But I'm one of those fishermen like you, fish during the summer, try to get out there when I can in the winter. Anyway, I was on my way out. Lake Winnebago coming back in toward shore last winter and got a little disoriented. We had some fog come through and I was in my truck and got along the shoreline to find my way back to the landing and then was cruising along and there's a nice 20-foot by 20-foot hole cut out in the ice and my truck went right through it.
Oh, no.
Oh, man.
Yeah. And I was in there with my dog and I, and it was only in maybe 5 feet of water or so, but it was, 100 yards offshore at least.
Oh, man.
Yeah, we went in and we got wet.
Boy.
We were able to get the doors open and get out and we were safe and such. But you could see the bottom of the lake. You know, it wasn't too awfully deep, thank God. But,
yeah, thank God.
And I called the local dive team, rescue, to get your car out of the water. Because it is true, like you're saying, the DNR can, they can fine you for leaving your boat or whatever, or mm-hmm. your car or truck or whatever it might be that goes to the lake. And it was about $900 to $1,000 to have them pull it out, and I'm a local college student here, and I don't really have
them. Oh, man. So and they didn't even have to dive for it. They could find it real easily.
Ten of my buddies together, and we got... took turns jumping in the water, and we used two come-alongs and two planks on the backside and cut a clean edge on the ice with the chainsaw and slowly pulled it out.
So you guys did it yourself?
So you did it yourself?
We did it ourselves.
Wow.
And we got it out, and the whole time the dive team was sitting there watching us do it, just waiting for us to say, okay, we give up. But we never did, and we kept going, and we were darn cold, but we got her out, and everyone was safe.
Yeah, boy, how long does it take to winch up 100 yards of cable with a come-along, huh?
About 14 hours.
Oh, man.
So
well, tell me, how much did it take to get your truck running again?
Well, actually, it was fully submerged, and we had a couple of my buddies that knew a thing or two about cars, and they said, no way, you know, it's a coaster or whatever. And because right when I went in, I used to live in Alaska and watch snowmobilers actually launching their snowmobiles in the summertime into the water, and you knew that you had to turn your engine off right as you're going into the water, and you might be able to do that. And I was smart enough to click my engine off right before I went in, and new spark plugs, had them take apart the engine, and probably $500 later it was running. So.
Oh, that's not bad.
No, it wasn't bad at all.
You actually got out pretty lucky.
Well. Yeah.
All right.
That's a great story, John. Thank you very much. Oh, I love these stories. Mark and Nina, your turn. Hi, Mark.
Yes, thanks for taking my call.
Sure.
I was born and raised in Monaco, Wisconsin, way up north, and on Lake Monaco, as a matter of fact. And due to military and getting married and stuff, I spent 23 years in a desert in Reno, so there wasn't much ice fishing there.
Yeah, a little different from Monaco, isn't it?
Yeah, Monaco, I lived there, and that was the way of life up there. We've recently moved back because to be closer to family, and we live in the Nina area now. Now, it's been that many years since I have ice fished, because a lot of guys don't like giving up their fishing secrets, kind of like you guys. But what's the best way to get started in a new area that I'm at? And I'll listen for your answer on the radio.
Sure.
Oh, man, this is getting perilously close to how-to information. I would say, you know, obviously, if you've got a friend who can kind of show you the ropes of what's happening now, that would be the best way to do it. You could always call your local DNR people to find out what some popular ice fishing lakes are. And frankly, if it's a good lake to fish in the summertime, it's going to be, you know, a good lake to fish in the wintertime. You know, see where the ice houses are, see where people are fishing. There was a great ice fishing show here in St. Paul just a couple of weeks ago, and that would have been a great place to go to see what's new in terms of equipment. I guess I would go to Cabela's or something, kind of cruise around online just to see what's available now, because the equipment really has gone through an upgrade. And
it's really not too expensive anymore. You can do it pretty cheaply.
Yeah, I mean, you don't need a lot of that stuff. I mean, you could obviously spend $10,000 to get yourself equipped. And we can talk about some of that stuff later. But I mean, to get the basic rig, just a short little spinning rod and a spinning reel, and a handful of sinkers and bobbers and hooks for minnows and hooks for little grubs. Or, you know, your little ice flies. Gosh, it doesn't take much at all. And then getting an auger of some kind. But I'm sure everything. If he ice fished up in Monaco, everything is going to seem pretty familiar to him. But just better.
Just better. And one other place to go is the local bait shops.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. Thanks for mentioning that. Yeah, these guys. If it's a good bait shop, they'll have tons of recommendations, and they'll have bait besides, so
yeah, they
kill two birds with one stone.
Yeah, I found the bait shops. No matter where I've been, the people there are always willing to give you good advice, because you know, that gives them repeat business. So I'd even start there.
Yeah,
I'd even start
absolutely.
The local bait shop. Well, good luck to you, Mark. Thank you very much. Doe and Eau Claire, it's your turn. Hi, thank you for calling.
Hi, how are you doing?
Good.
Inspired by you, I'm heading to the Packer Bear game, so I guess I'm going to be doing a little bit of ice fishing myself tonight in the bleachers.
Let's see, I think I'm rooting for the Packers here.
Yeah, so I'm rooting for the Packers. It's so fitting, because tonight when I go there, I'm going to have a leg up on so many people just from my UP/ice fishing background.
There you go. Where are all your ice fishing clothes?
All these different collars, it's like a long laundry list of shame in areas that I've ice fished, from Minocqua to Menominee to Higgins Lake. But I originally called because you hear the stories of people fishing for the big fish all the time, but one of the greatest times I ever had ice fishing was ice fishing for smelt.
For smelt?
In Higgins Lake.
I've never done that. Tell me about ice fishing for smelt. What do you use for bait?
It's one of the craziest things ever. You use a little wax worm,
uh-huh.
And you have an incredibly small hook,
right.
Almost like a thread fishing line, and we had a reel that you could reel in, but what it was we had eggshells on the bottom for contrast,
uh-huh.
and we were getting these schools, and it was just one after the other. We're talking hundreds, but, you know, one of the reasons why it might be so memorable is because we were fishing so much we forgot to drink.
Oh, my gosh.
We get that, and, you know, we're going, wow, I feel pretty good.
Did you have to bite the head off the smelt when you pulled it up through the hole?
Well, I guess the point is that sometimes the best moments are from some really small fish, and it was a hell of a fish fry.
Boy, I bet.
That
sounds great.
That's a great story. Well, I'll tell you what, some of the most fun fishing I've had ice fishing is fishing for perch or fishing for bluegills.
Mm-hmm.
You know, that you come on a school of them, and they bite readily, and they taste awfully good. You know, the fish do taste better caught in the winter.
Yeah, I think that's why a lot of people like ice fishing, because the fish taste about as fresh as they can possibly be.
Yeah,
and that goes for anything from walleyes to perch to sunfish.
And people who've never been out on the ice, who've never fished it, I'll tell you what, go on out on the ice and find a guy, the person who's fishing, guy or gal who's fishing, and then take a look down the hole itself, because one of the things you notice is that if you're on a lake that's not real clear in the summertime, in the wintertime through the ice, it's usually very clear.
Sure. All the algae has gone home. all the little phytoplankton and zooplankton are all, a lot of that has cleared out. And it's like looking through gin.
Yeah, it is.
I had a terrific experience here just last weekend. I was up in the Upper Peninsula, up not too far from Crystal Falls, Iron Mountain area.
Yeah.
And I went out with a guy named Mike Holmes, who is a longtime spear fisherman.
Yeah.
And he had his dark house up there, and my wife and I joined him, and he had a 3-foot by 6-foot hole cut in about 7 feet of water, and we sat there with him, and he was working his handmade decoys. He's also quite a decoy carver, and that was exciting. It was like hunting,
mm-hmm.
Because you'd be looking through that big hole, which you've got all this light pouring in through the ice on the outside of the shack and bouncing around and emerging from the hole, and it glows like a flat screen TV.
Yeah.
And you can see everything down there, and there'd be bluegills coming in, and even a big bass swam by, and then these northern pike would flash through there, and you'd get to watch the decoy, and all of a sudden a northern pike would come in and make a pass at the decoy and linger long enough that he could ease his spear into the water and bang.
Yeah.
It was really exciting. It was a lot like the most suspenseful moments of deer hunting.
Yeah, I agree. Mary in Chippewa Falls, we're on to you now. Hi, Mary.
Hi. Well, now what you're talking about does sound kind of interesting. I went ice fishing once for about 20 minutes, and to me it seemed like, you know, you watch the tip-up, it's like about as exciting as setting mouse traps.
Yeah.
And so that was about it for me. But I have a question. I'm
uh-huh.
really hoping you can answer this. I used to live up on Shawamigan Bay,
uh-huh.
a little couple miles out of Washburn,
mm-hmm.
and it's a great place to ice fish, I understand.
Okay, and I can't personally vouch for that, but
yeah. Well,
all right.
Anyway, that's what they say. So, not that I ever knew it personally, but I lived there, and I had this big window, and you'd see the blank lake, and it would be frozen, and the snow would be on it, and people would be, you know, skiing or skating and things like that.
Mm-hmm.
But no ice fishermen. Then you'd wake up one day, and there'd be a small city right in front of my house on the lake.
Okay.
And I wanted to know, how do they know to come all on that day? I mean, they never, it wasn't like you saw one or two, and then the next day a few more came. They were all there, all just like, bam. And I asked them, I even walked out there and asked them, I said, how do you guys know? Are you in a club or something?
Yeah.
Or is there a radio station? No. You know, and now maybe they were joshing me or something, and they really did have some information. They said, no, we just, ice is right.
Yeah. Well, there's a genetic instinct. It's like fish in a school all turning at once, or birds in a flock all turning in the same direction. Ice fishermen are attuned to these natural vibrations, see, and they all know it's time to be out on the ice exactly now.
Yeah. Now you're judging me.
I'm not sure why they weren't out there earlier. Maybe what you were, because the best fishing of the year is usually when the ice first forms. And so if it's thick enough for people to be out there skating and playing hockey and walking around on the ice, you'd normally expect to see some anglers out there. Now, they're not going to move their shacks out there until you get a little more ice, and they're not going to drive out there. Maybe what happened is that the ice finally got thick enough that they could, you know, they could start moving heavy stuff like ice houses or four-wheelers or trucks out there. That's about the only thing I can think of, because otherwise, I've got friends who are really into ice fishing who are out there with a big long ice chisel, and they're walking across an inch and a half of ice and smacking it with the ice chisel and just to make sure they won't go through. They want to get out there as soon as possible.
Yeah, you want to get out there for that early ice. I can remember being on Lake Mendota, which is a very large lake, with first ice, and a pressure crack. The first pressure crack came, and
uh-huh.
It sounded like dynamite going across.
That scares you, doesn't it?
Yeah, and then the ice itself was not completely rigid, so the ice had a little wave to it. If you know what I mean.
Yes, yes.
And we stopped.
Yeah, I bet you did.
And paused. And decided not to go any further and dug our holes right there.
Yep. I know a friend who takes a portable, cordless hand drill with him.
Oh.
And he drills to make sure that he's got 4 inches of ice to walk on. And if he doesn't, he turns around and goes back the way he came.
Well, this is—I tell you, Greg. This is great fun. And again, your book is available; should be available anywhere.
I would think just about anywhere up north here, whether it's Wisconsin or Minnesota or Michigan. If not, readily available online, either through the Minnesota Historical Society Press or Amazon.com, BarnesandNoble.com.
Well, it's been a real pleasure. There's lots of people online who. I guess I'm not surprised. We have a lot of people who like to ice fish.
Well, you're in Wisconsin after all.
Yeah, we are. That's exactly right. Greg, thank you so much for being with us.
Well, my pleasure. Anytime you want to talk about ice fishing, it's fine with me.
All right. Greg Brining is the co-author, along with Lane Kennedy, of the book A Hard Water World, Ice Fishing and Why We Do It. Let me do it again. A Hard Water World, Ice Fishing and Why We Do It, published by Minnesota Historical Society Press. Some nice essays that Greg has written about ice fishing and about the book, and filled with wonderful photography, great shots of people ice fishing. And I tell you what, it's been a real pleasure for me to talk with Greg, but also to look through the book. So I hope you have a chance to see that book. It's a make a fine holiday gift, as a matter of fact. Greg Brining, B-R-E-I-N-I-N-G, Brining. Well, ice fishing's fun. And another thing I like to do in the wintertime, and our family likes to do, is snowshoe. And Darren Bush, owner of Rutabaga of Madison, the world's largest paddle sports store, with us next. When he can't get on the water, he teaches snowshoeing and building and making snowshoes. That coming up next here on the Ideas Network of Wisconsin Public Radio.